This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to Africa News Tonight. Thank you for joining us. I'm Mukbil Yabaro. Here's what's coming up.
There are still 101 hostages in Gaza. If something is learned from what we learned last night when these hostages' bodies were found, is that military pressure will not save them. Military pressure will kill them.
That was Israeli negotiator Gershon Baskin on hostages being killed in a Gaza tunnel shortly before Israel forces reached them. Also, China has rolled out the red carpet for leaders from across Africa seeking to deepen ties. And Bernard Avel hosts one of the biggest morning shows in Ghana, but scammers used artificial intelligence to clone his voice to endorse a product. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. After the bodies of six slain Israeli hostages were found in a tunnel in southern Gaza, Israelis have reacted with shock and anger. Some blame the Israeli government for not reaching a ceasefire deal with Hamas earlier. Israel's largest labor union called a general strike starting Monday until the government signs a deal. Linda Gradstein reports for VOA from Jerusalem.
Just days after their families screamed to the hostages on loudspeakers at the Israeli-Gaza border, the Israeli army announced that six hostages were found in a tunnel in southern Gaza. The murdered hostages included Hirsch Goldberg Polan, a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen. Israeli Army spokesman Daniel Hagari says the six were murdered by Hamas terrorists shortly before soldiers reached them. He said they had been abducted alive and their bodies were found during combat in the southern Gaza city of Rafah, near where Israeli troops rescued a Bedouin hostage alive last week. The Israeli press says that rescue may have provoked Hamas to kill the six hostages, fearing the Israeli soldiers were getting closer. It was also reported that three of the six killed were set to be released on humanitarian grounds in the first stage of a ceasefire, including Goldberg Polan and two women. In mass demonstrations around the country, protesters say the government is sabotaging a hostage release deal in favor of maintaining a military presence along the Gaza-Egypt border. This policy decision was confirmed by government cabinet ministers a few days ago, and according to Israeli press reports, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu acknowledged that their decision likely meant the collapse of negotiations over a hostage deal. But after the killing of the six hostages, Netanyahu blamed Hamas for the lack of any hostage deal. Netanyahu said that while Israel is conducting intensive negotiations with the mediators to reach a deal, Hamas refuses any proposal. He said that anyone who murders hostages does not want a deal. Polls show a majority of the Israeli public supports a ceasefire deal as the only way to release the hostages, even if it means that Hamas is not completely destroyed, according to Gershon Baskin, a longtime Israeli negotiator with Hamas.
The military pressure does not release hostages. Eight hostages were rescued in military operations. There are still 101 hostages in Gaza. If something is learned from what we learned last night when these hostages' bodies were found, is that military pressure will not save them. Military pressure will kill them.
Amid national mourning for the six young hostages, Israelis have gone into the streets in mass demonstrations against Netanyahu's military policy and are holding a one-day general strike Monday. Linda Gradstein for VOA News, Jerusalem.
The general strike led to closures and other disruptions around the country, including at its main international airport. Ben Gurion halted outgoing flights for 2 hours, although incoming flights continued as usual during the time. Banks, some large malls, and government offices were also closed due to the strike. Public transit was limited. Municipalities in Israel's populated central area, including Tel Aviv, participated in the strike, leading to shortened school hours and cancellations for public daycares and kindergartens. The strike was called by the head of Israel's Trade Union Federation to pressure the government into signing a hostage deal with Hamas after six hostages held in Gaza since October 7th were killed and bodies retrieved in Israel. Massive protests swept Israel Sunday as frustrations mounted over the failure of country's leadership to secure a ceasefire deal that would free Israeli captives. Crowds estimated by Israel's media, numbers of up to 500,000 strong, demonstrated in Jerusalem, Tel Aviv, and other cities, demanding that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu do more to bring home the remaining 101 hostages, about a third of whom Israeli officials estimated have died. This is the most pressure on Netanyahu's coalition government since the start of the war last October. VOA Scott Walterman talked about this with Constance Musu, an associate professor at the Graduate School of Public and International Affairs at the University of Ottawa.
The resentment towards Netanyahu has always simmered and has exploded periodically, but the realization that hostages who had survived until now were only now killed and died as a result of the lack of an agreement, of a deal, it's really kind of uncorked a bottle of outrage.
I know we keep asking this question. We've been asking it for a long time, but I'm going to ask it again. How much can Netanyahu and his coalition withstand? Can they survive this?
For the past over 330 days, it seemed that they've been almost impermeable, almost continued ahead and forge ahead with the strategy that has not worked. In the hope of keeping the coalition together and also in a way showing politically some kind of victory that, standing firm on certain things, on not withdrawing, on not leaving the Philadelphia corridor, et cetera, would, in a way signify some kind of victory on the part of Israel. But the Israelis care about the hostages. They want the hostages back. That is priority number one. And there is a complete separation between what, the 100,000 of people in the street want and what the prime minister wants for himself and for his coalition.
What does it take to dislodge this coalition from power?
You know, this has been a question that has vexed people, well, even before October 7, right, with all the demonstrations that were political in nature over the judicial reform, and before that, all the corruption scandals that have plagued Netanyahu in the past years, and he seemed to have gone through each and every possible challenge, including the horror of October 7, and always found a way to continue. Now, what is happening now is also a general strike that is aimed at stopping the economy, essentially. So basically, the whole country coming to a standstill to push Netanyahu out. You know, it's difficult to comment on what goes through the mind of Netanyahu, but one has to wonder if what goes through his mind is at this point ever about Israel and not just about himself. And if the country at this point just has had enough of that. Again, what one of the big questions when you have this kind of pressure and upheaval is what would be taking the place of the current coalition. You know, is there enough, are there enough political figures ready and able to put together a coalition that would last? And one of the great challenges in any kind of configuration of the Israeli political life is the instability of the coalition. So one thing is to say that, many are adverse to Netanyahu, but apart from having a common enemy, you could say, in a political enemy in Netanyahu, is there enough common ground among the other political forces to bring about a coalition that is stable and that lasts more than the next crisis?
That was Constanza Musu, an associate professor at the Graduate School of Public and International Affairs at the University of Ottawa, speaking with VOA Scott Walterman. China rolled out the red carpet on Monday for leaders from across Africa seeking to deepen ties with the resource-rich continent it has furnished with billions in loans for infrastructure and development. The French news agency AFP reports that among the leaders in the capital for the forum is South African President Cyril Ramaphosa, who met Chinese leader Xi Jinping on Monday. His four-day trip will also include a visit to the southern tech powerhouse city of Shenzhen. China and South Africa are expected to sign a number of agreements focused on enhancing economic cooperation and the implementation of technical cooperation, Ramaphosa's office said. Trade between China and South Africa soared to $38.8 billion in 2023, according to the South African presidency. Xi also met Democratic Republic of Congo President Felix Tshisekedi on Monday. China has a significant presence in the DRC, where it is keen on tapping vast natural resources, including copper, gold, lithium, and rare earth minerals. You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Mukbil Yabaro in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you will find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. Bernard Avil hosts one of the biggest morning shows in Ghana, but scammers used artificial intelligence or AI to clone his voice to endorse a product. Analysts warn the same technology could be used to spread disinformation ahead of Ghana's elections in December. For VOA News, Sinano Tord reports from Accra.
Your financing conditions are not favorable and you've been forced.
From the studios of City FM in Accra, Bernard Avler's voice reaches tens of thousands of Ghanaians every weekday. Along with his team, the radio and TV host engages the nation on the award-winning City Breakfast show and on his TV show, The Point of View.
I use a talk program platform to raise important development issues, but I also use the power of good interviews to question our duty bearers to actually demand for accountability.
But that voice of accountability has been hijacked.
Somebody called me and said, Bernard, I'm calling to check on the sex enhancement medicine that you discussed on your TV show last week. And I was like, whoa, what are you talking about?
Avler says perpetrators used artificial intelligence tools to clone his voice and show, then broadcast it on Facebook. To make it authentic, they used his show's introduction.
Welcome to The Point of View. This is your favorite current affairs show on television.
But instead of talking about current affairs, the AI version promoted products.
This is me they're using. And then a voice that sounds like mine somehow learns how I introduce my show.
The people are coming up with new systems.
Computer scientist and researcher Kweku Andoyamwa notes a surge in deepfake cloning technology since 2022, with tools now easily accessible.
They charge you $1, which gives you access to train your clone your voice in like 3 steps. You repeat 3 phrases, and then you have a cloned version of your voice saying anything.
In an election year, the easy access to AI poses a serious threat to Ghana's peace and security, analysts say. During the 2020 election, fake news and misinformation led to unrest, and at least 8 deaths linked to political violence were recorded. Some worry that cloning technologies could make the situation worse this year. City FM has already seen increased disinformation. It says perpetrators are using the media outlet's brand and credibility to spread disinformation. For this reason, City FM is introducing security features to flag fake news and clone content in their widely circulated photos and stories. Using QR code technology, audiences can easily verify images. It is also piloting a fact-checking project funded by the Danish Embassy in partnership with the Ghana Center for Democratic Development. It brings together forensic and investigative journalists.
And then we are going the step further of also getting tech involved, combating it, and actually showing proof of the behind the scenes of actually we getting the verification of those disinformation content.
Alongside fact-check initiatives in Ghana are calls for greater public education in media literacy and the detection of fake media in the run-up to elections. Sena Anutot for VOA News, Accra, Ghana.
So Some Gold Star families expressed support Sunday for former President Donald Trump after he was criticized for taking photos and videos at a restricted section of Arlington National Cemetery last week. Vice President Kamala Harris, who is also in the race for the White House, added her voice to those condemning Trump's visit and deemed it a political stunt. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias has the story.
The Democratic presidential nominee, Vice President Kamala Harris, joined in the criticism of the Trump campaign for taking images last week of the former president's visit to Section 60 of the Arlington National Cemetery. Political activities in that section are strictly forbidden by federal law and Pentagon policies, and thus an altercation with a cemetery employee ensued. On Saturday, Harris addressed the issue in a message on X, formerly Twitter. "Let me be clear. The former president disrespected sacred ground, all for the sake of a political stunt." Trump, the Republican presidential nominee, repeated his counterargument Saturday that he was there at the invitation of relatives of soldiers who died in a terrorist attack during the 2021 U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan.
He said to me, I'm not surprised, I never even thought about it, "Sir, would it be possible for you to have a picture with us by the tombstone of my son?" I said, "Absolutely." I wasn't doing it for, I don't need publicity. I get a lot of publicity.
The Trump campaign released a statement and video clip Sunday by some Gold Star families backing his visit. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham was asked on ABC's This Week show whether he thinks the Trump campaign crossed the line.
"I'm all for looking at what happened. But you know what really is unfortunate? That these families had to go visit their fallen loved ones at Arlington due to incompetence by the Biden administration. Rise in terrorism, combine that with a broken border, another 9/11's coming our way."
When it comes to securing the border, Harris's vision would prove the most effective, said Colorado Governor Jared Polis. He was asked to clarify if it would include building walls and how it compares to Trump's approach. The Democrat was also interviewed Sunday on ABC.
"The border wall that Donald Trump has proposed is a huge boondoggle and waste of taxpayer money. He effectively talked about a wall across the entire border rather than using barriers of different kinds effectively. Kamala Harris is for is securing it in the most cost-effective way possible."
On the Labor Day holiday Monday, Vice President Harris will campaign in Michigan and Pennsylvania. On Tuesday, her campaign will launch the Fighting for Reproductive Freedom bus tour, with a kickoff event in Palm Beach, Florida. The Trump Vance campaign will hold events Tuesday in Braselton, Georgia, and Mesa, Arizona. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
Authorities in the Congolese capital, Kinshasa, say inmates have tried to break out of the main prison, and the Associated Press reports heavy gunfire coming from the overcrowded facility. Congolese government and spokesman Patrick Muyaya confirmed on X that there was an attempted escape on Monday. Local media reported security forces killed some of those who tried to flee. By Monday morning, security forces cordoned off the road leading to the prison. Videos purporting to be from inside the Makala prison showed several bodies on the ground. Justice Minister Constant Mutamba called the incident a premeditated act of sabotage that was carried out as authorities were making efforts to decongest prisons and improve their conditions. And now for the sports wrap. We're going to kick off the sports wrap with football action over the weekend. Premier League was action-packed. Let's start off with my main man, David Vandy's team, Liverpool, going up against Manchester United at Old Trafford. Manchester United have looked not quite like themselves in recent times. People were expecting with this new look and this new start for the Premier League season that they would maybe showcase a little bit more of the original legacy of that Manchester United that people have grown to love. Unfortunately, this was not that day. The game ended 3-0 with Liverpool coming out with a decisive victory. Mohamed Salah being one of the most impactful players with two assists to Luis Diaz and finally scoring as well. If we're going to go to another game that stirred up some controversy, Arsenal versus Brighton. Arsenal were up 1-0 when one of their central midfielders, Declan Rice, ends up getting a red card. The officiating in the English Premier League has been one that has been questioned quite a bit. And another controversial, basically another controversial call like this is putting fans at unease this early in the season. Brighton was able to level up and come back from that game, ending up with a 1-1 draw. Aston Villa comes back from a loss last week and is able to win 2-1 against Leicester City. And last but not least, Manchester City is clicking on all cylinders. The four-time back-to-back-to-back-to-back English Premier League champs are on a roll with Erling Haaland, their main man, goal-scoring number 9. Phenom is really on form this year. Two games with hat-tricks. He scored 3 goals in 2 games back-to-back. They win against West Ham 3-1. Now, if we're going to go switch over to La Liga, definitely have to speak about Real Madrid with their 2-0 win against Real Betis. Kylian Mbappe's first goal in La Liga, and then he finishes it off with the second one, so he gets the brace against Real Betis. We're starting to see that cohesiveness between him and Vinicius Jr. Vinicius is a potential, he's at the top of the Ballon d'Or race this year, so it's great to see them two starting to build that chemistry. The team has a lot of big names, but sometimes big names do not necessarily mean that you guys get the win. Now, interestingly enough, they are not leading at the top of La Liga with the big names that they have. Barcelona is at the top, and man, did they win big this weekend. Barcelona win 7-0 against Valladolid. 7-0 is quite a victory with Rafinha scoring 3 goals. So the young Brazilian, it's nice to see him starting to get in form a bit. But what a team. And then if we're going to talk about one more team in La Liga, I would have to say Atletico Madrid were able to get a 1-0 victory over the Athletic Club. Now, if we're going to switch over to the U.S. Open, man, the man that we're going to have to talk about is Francis Tiafoe. They call him Big Foe, you know, Sierra Leonean. His parents are Sierra Leonean immigrants. The young man really is on top form. He is the world number 20 this year, but he had a rematch against Shelton, who had a viral clip against him the last time that they met, and Shelton had nothing but praise for him. He said that this year, Shelton has been on fire. He's the world number 13 and said that he knew earlier on in this game that it was going to be a long day after he really, I believe he sent off one of his serves at 130 miles an hour, and it was responded with a, you know, he came back with it. And he said, once I seen him return my serve with that much ease, it was going to be a very difficult match. So shout out to Big Foe is what they call him right now. He was also able to defeat Popyrin, the world number 28 from Australia, who actually ended up beating the defending U.S. champ, Djokovic. So Djokovic is out on the men's side, and unfortunately, Coco Gauff also meets another American, Navarro, who has had some luck against her earlier on this year as well, so she loses to her, so both defending champs are out, so it's going to be very interesting to see if Navarro can take it all the way, or if Sabalenka will end up winning this year, as she is the world number 2 and projected to win. So that is all for the U.S. Open. And that is all for the sports wrap. I am Mukbil Yavaro. I'm in for Yahyaeus Wahib here in Washington. That is all for African News Tonight. Big shout out to my main man, David Vandy, on the production, and our technician in the building, Joe Gill. Have a good one.